Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
We are starting a new series this morning on the book of James. And if you're new here, you're visiting, you're still trying to figure out who we are and what we do, well, every Sunday here at the 180, we preach from the Bible. And sometimes we choose topics that we feel are relevant to kind of go through, or other times we choose like little parts of the Bible. And so this time we decided we were going to go through the book of James. And it's a short little letter from a guy named James, and it's 5 chapters. And so what we're going to be doing during the series, we're going to be encouraging you to read the book of James. And so maybe you could call a friend, or you know, get it on your iPhone or on your iPad, or maybe you're more a physical book kind of person, or you're an audio book person, you could get it on your phone. And I timed it. And it's about 16 minutes to read the 5 chapters of James. Okay, so I just to put it in perspective, the average Netflix episode is 22 minutes or 42 minutes. Okay, so just putting it out there, what I'm trying to tell you is that I believe in you. You can do this. You can do this. Just read maybe once a week, maybe once a day if you're really up to it, because on Sundays you'll get a snapshot of some of the things we're teaching and we're learning. But when you sit down and read the whole letter, you're actually reading it the way it was meant to be read. And it was a letter to be read in one sitting. So we're going to encourage you to do that. And some of you know that James is a very unique person because James has a very interesting relationship to Jesus. James wasn't always a follower of Jesus. He wasn't always a disciple of Jesus. But James has a very unique relationship to Jesus because James was Jesus' younger brother. James was Jesus' younger half-brother. And so just imagine what it would be like to be Jesus' younger brother. Can you think about this for a second? How many of you have a sibling? How many of you, your sibling thinks they're God? So, a little bit strange, right? Imagine like you're going on your sibling's Facebook profile and it's under occupation, the way, the truth, and the life. You'd be a little bit concerned, right? It's a little bit strange. It's a little bit, and just think about what it's like to be the younger brother of Jesus. I mean, you're doing chores around the house together. Mary is like, James, can't you be like your older brother? Come on, like, you know, what would happen when they played games together, when they built sandcastles? Was Jesus' sandcastle, like, amazing? We don't really know. Maybe, I always wondered, when Jesus, like, if Jesus played Monopoly, would he let everybody, win? Because he was just so loving? How would he do it? We don't really know those things, but just imagine what it's like to be the younger brother of Jesus. And like I mentioned, James wasn't always a disciple of Jesus. In fact, what we find in the early stories of Jesus is that James and the family of Jesus was actually more embarrassed about Jesus. And this is what we find in Mark chapter 3. You could follow along on the slide behind me. It says, when his family heard about this, about what Jesus was doing, they went to take charge of him. For they said, he is out of his mind. Then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone into a house to call him, to call Jesus. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, your mother and brothers are outside looking for you. So we get this early picture of Jesus' family, of most likely James included in that picture, and James is kind of embarrassed, kind of concerned. Right? Imagine your sibling is like thinks they're God, and you're like, oh, we need to put this person in the house. We need to close the door. We need to lock the door, and we need to call a doctor. And it's really important that we understand that James begins this way. That before we see the James who writes a book of the Bible and becomes a leader of the church, James begins by believing that Jesus is out of his mind. And this is so important in this series because maybe there's people in your life, in your circles, in your spheres, in your relationships, that is a lot like the way James used to be. That Jesus is maybe crazy. That they're just not ready for Jesus. And what would it mean for you and I to make room for those people? What would it mean for us to really make room for the people who think, well, Jesus is out of his mind? And maybe you're here and you're in this room and that's you and you're like, I kind of think Jesus was crazy and I think all of you guys are crazy. Well, we are so glad you're here. There's people in the Bible that are a lot like you. And so when James starts off, he starts off as a doubter, as a skeptic, as someone who isn't really sure about Jesus. But look at how he introduces himself at the beginning of this letter. It says this, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amazing. A servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ. Something changed in James. Something miraculous happened to James, and maybe what happened was that James encountered the risen Jesus. Maybe after that Easter morning, that first Easter morning, James saw Jesus and realized who he was. And last week, last Sunday, we celebrated Easter, or Resurrection Sunday. And not only do we celebrate that Jesus rose from the dead, but on Easter Sunday, we celebrate that Jesus is still alive today. And if that means anything, friends, it means that Jesus can still transform lives. If that means anything, if Jesus is alive, then he can transform lives and he could take a skeptic and a doubter to become a leader and a leader in the church. Someone who writes the book of the Bible. And one of the big reminders that James is going to give us in this letter as we read it is that the risen Jesus isn't just for all those people out there, the doubters and the skeptics and the atheists and those people, but the risen Jesus is seeking to encounter you and me. And so there's this constant theme in the book of James where James is going to tell us, hey, it's really easy to know about Jesus, to be around Jesus, to live in the same house as Jesus, to grow up with Jesus, and never let the risen Jesus encounter you. Never really let yourself be transformed by the risen Jesus. And the word for this in the book of James is the word maturity. Maturity. So you may have noticed the subtitle of our series is Confronting the Lies That Keep Us from Maturity. Because it's so easy to be close to Jesus. It's so easy to say, I have faith in Jesus, and yet never let him transform us. Never let him transform us. And so when James talks about maturity, he gives us this picture of wholeness, this picture of being fully alive, of having a fully integrated life. That the risen Jesus, the one who is alive right now, today, is at work in the world and in our lives. To bring wholeness in our relationships, in our workplace, in our habits, in the way that we think, the way that we feel. And so one of the things that James is going to do in this series, in this letter, is he talks about all kinds of these topics. He's going to talk about money and poverty. He's going to talk about emotional issues and relational issues. He's going to talk about anger. He's going to talk about how we use our words, gossip and slander, how we show favoritism to some people, how we run our businesses, that some of us can run our businesses in such a way that rather than bringing life and wholeness to the world, we bring oppression to the world. James wants to talk about that. That's what he calls maturity. That faith and belief always leads to a new way of life. And so this morning we're going to start with the first few verses of James. And so James is going to start by talking about something that has the potential to bring maturity in our lives. And it's trials. Trials. Difficulty. Conflict. Pressure. Pain. And he's going to help us to think, how do we live in times of trial? How do we live in times of difficulty? How do we live, how do we think about God in times of pain? And so this is how he begins. He starts this way. He says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So we just ended a series called God is Blank, and in the series we learned that Jesus has this way of constantly correcting our understanding of who God is. And he's constantly helping us understand, what God is this that we're following, that we're believing in? And James begins this way. See, it's very easy to think that now that I believe in God, now that I'm following Jesus, now that, you know, all my problems are just going to go away. It's very easy today to think that, but also in James's world, that everything is just going to work out according to what I want, and it's going to work out in my favor, that I'll get the job that I want, I'll get the promotion that I want, I'll get the relationship that I want, and that my kids will turn out just as I expected and want. And James says, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. That there will be times in your life where your faith will be tested. There will be times in your life where you'll want to quit and not persevere. There will be times in your life where you'll wonder, is this even worth it? Is this even worth doing again and again and again? He says, you're going to have various kinds, many kinds of trials. Oh, thanks, James. Very positive. Thank you. All kinds of trials. It could be family, relational. It could be financial trials. It could be physical or emotional. And he says, you're going to have times in your life, maybe big trials, maybe small trials, where you're just going to want to quit. And maybe some of you right now, you feel like you're in a trial. You're in this moment right now, and you're feeling like, I don't know if I could keep going. I don't know what to do. Or maybe you're somewhere, and you see it coming. It's coming. You see it. You ever notice? They don't just come one at a time. It could happen like all three things at once. And you're like, whoa. And some of you, maybe you're feeling this already right now in your life. So when was the last time that your faith was tested? When was the last time you experienced a trial where you really felt that, you know, my faith is being tested right now? You know, it's funny because James, he says this. He says, consider it pure joy when you face trials. Now, I don't know about you, but I get a little nervous about that. Does anybody else? Anybody get nervous? Because I know people, and you know people, not you, none of you, but I know people who like this part of the verse, right? Consider it pure joy. Consider it pure joy. Even the way they say it, it's like, and what they mean when they say that, what happens is they take it out of context, right? They take it out of context, and they just think that joy means happiness. That's what they think. They think considering it pure joy means when you're going through a really rough time, just be happy. And you could be like, but I got hit by a car. And he'll be like, but at least it wasn't a bus. Consider it pure joy. Right? You know what I'm talking about. You'll be like, I just kind of want to kill you. Well, I'll go to heaven, considering it pure joy. And maybe you've been in a situation where you were experiencing a trial, you were holding on to something and it was burdensome and you were all alone and you mustered up the courage to talk to somebody and what you needed was for them to just listen. And instead they said something like, well, just consider it pure joy. I'm like, come on, just turn that frown upside down. Just smile, just be happy. And they thought maybe that that would be comforting, but that's maybe not what you needed in the moment. And what you really needed was somebody to say, you know, that's really hard to go through what you went through. Or maybe I don't know what that's like. And sometimes we have this temptation to make joy equal happiness. And what happens when we do that is we end up avoid talking about trials. We avoid talking about difficulties and conflicts and moments where our faith was tested. So when was the last time that you talked to somebody about your faith being tested? And sometimes, considering it pure joy, we talk about that and we say stuff like that, and it's really just an excuse not to listen, not to grieve with someone, not to carry a burden with someone who's struggling. And you know, James was very aware of this. That's why later on, in the first chapter, he's going to say, be quick to listen and slow to speak. You can't think about this first verse without really paying attention to the second, that later on verse. This is so important. This is why we're going to encourage you to read the book of James in one sitting, in its full context. And so what happens oftentimes in many religious communities, in many churches, is that it becomes really hard to talk about trials. It becomes really difficult to talk about times where your faith is tested. It's almost embarrassing or even shameful to talk about that, right? Because somewhere along the way, your faith being tested becomes a sign of immaturity. And maybe you're here and you've been going through something, you've kept it a secret. And maybe you've been here and you're like, my faith is being tested, but you haven't spoken to anybody about it. Because you think the trials equal immaturity. That's not at all what James is going to say. He says, we all experience trials. We will all experience moments where our faith is tested. You will experience trials that test your faith. And to consider it pure joy is not just to be happy and put a smile and to not talk about it and to pretend like it's all going to be okay, but to know that maybe in the midst of this, God is somehow working, that somehow God is doing something. Now, some of you may have noticed by me standing up here that I recently joined a gym. Or not, it's fine, it's whatever, it's good. But I was thinking about this, I was thinking about joy in the midst of pain, and I was thinking about this, when I'm sore from the gym, I'm not happy about it. In fact, you could ask my wife, I complain about it, and I act like I need crutches or something, and it's like I'm a drama queen, and it's ridiculous. But when I'm not sore after the gym, I'm a little bit disappointed. I'm a little bit disappointed because soreness is actually a sign that things are getting healthier, that things are getting better, that something is growing. And so I think James is saying something like this, that you don't have to run after trials or look for trials or make yourself into a victim who's always going through trials. I mean, that's not what he's saying. But he's saying, I'm sure he's saying this, that you don't have to pretend to be happy in times of trial. But you can trust that in the moments of trial that God is helping you and I become whole, become mature. That is called joy. And it's different than happiness. And so James, as I was reading this, I realized James is making some pretty big assumptions here. He's assuming that we care about maturity. He's assuming that the early church who received these letters actually wanted to grow. Because here's the thing, you can't experience this kind of joy if you don't care about growth. And so the question for us as we go through this series is, do you care about growing? Do you want to grow? Are you willing to learn and open yourself up to grow in ways that might actually be painful? Because if you don't want to grow, it's very easy, it's very simple. This is what you do. All you gotta do is that when things get hard, quit. Just quit. See, James says there's this important ingredient. There's this really important ingredient that's necessary for maturity to happen. It's called perseverance. Perseverance. Another word would be endurance, or maybe in your translation, steadfastness. In other words, not quitting when things get hard. And this is, I think, so important for us today more than ever before, because it's so easy to give up on things as soon as they get hard. You know why? Because today we have so many options and choices available. So why not quit when things get hard? When your job gets hard, why not just quit that job and get another job? Right? You have a relationship with someone and it gets uncomfortable and there's a conflict. You could just quit that relationship, ghost them, block them, whatever, and make a new relationship. Things aren't going well in your marriage, just get a new marriage. Have a new kids. Well, you can't get rid of your kids. Go to another school when things are going really hard for you at school. And it's so easy to go through our lives and never actually develop maturity because we always quit when things are hard. Now, I just want to say this one thing that's really important is that sometimes you do need to walk away. Sometimes we do need to walk away from a situation or a relationship or a job because it's dysfunctional, it's poisonous, and it's killing you, and you need to cut it out. Am I still on? Sometimes we need to cut out certain things in our lives. And that's why James says, ask for wisdom. Ask for wisdom. But maybe you're here and you've been honest enough to admit you've had times in your life where you've just come to this realization like, hey, I'm 30 years old, or I'm 20 years old, or I'm 40 years old, and I'm not as mature as I thought I would be. I'm not as mature as I thought I would be in this area. I thought I was going to be more mature in this area when it comes to this, or when it comes to finances, or when it comes to certain kind of relationship dynamics. I thought I would be more mature. And James is saying, hey, maybe part of the reason you never grow in this area is because when things got hard, you quit. In your job, in your relationship. And maybe we've bought into this idea that God wants us to always be comfortable and happy. And James says, no, God's going to use the trials to help you grow, to give you wisdom, to make you whole and complete, lacking nothing. But you can't quit every time things get hard, when things get inconvenient. You know, and I was thinking about this in my own life, and a little while ago I had a job, and it was a great job, but things started to get a little bit hard. And there was a relationship dynamic that was happening in the job that was really, really difficult to deal with. And, you know, there was conflict, and it was uncomfortable, and it was stressful. And you know, I started to think, you know what? These people, they don't appreciate me enough. And, I don't need this. I could just get a job where they'll appreciate me. I'm just going to get a job because I'm going to show them. And so that's what I did. I quit, and I found another job. And something started to happen, that the same things that were happening in job A started to happen in job B. Has that ever happened in your life? Do you realize? Is this a pattern? Why is Ed, did they talk to each other? And you start to realize that maybe the problem wasn't there, maybe the problem was here. And James tells us that sometimes, he's going to say this in this text, and when you go home and you read it, he's going to say sometimes the trials, the temptations, the things that need to work out, they don't come from out there, they come from our own hearts. And so when things get hard, trials start to overwhelm you, James is going to say, ask God for wisdom. Ask God for wisdom. This is amazing. And look at what it says. It says this, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all, without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Strong words. Now let's remember that James was once a person who thought Jesus was out of his mind. Let's remember that. He didn't always believe that Jesus was who he said he was. And so it's very important for us to understand that in the Bible, and we've talked about this here before, there's two kinds of doubt. And so you could go to the next slide, and I'm going to try to unpack this a little bit. And so when James is talking about, there's two kinds of doubt here. There's doubt in God's existence, that he's alive, that he's actually there. And then there's doubt in God's character. Okay, and so when James is talking about doubt, he is not talking about people who don't believe in God. He's not talking about people who have maybe questions about whether or not God exists and they're just not sure. That's not what he's talking about. When James is talking about doubt, we have to remember this, he's talking to Christians who believe in God. And so what he says is, when you ask God, don't ask in such a way that you think God is against you. Don't ask in such a way that you think God is going to punish you. See, there's a kind of doubt that refuses to believe that God is for you. This is a doubt in the character of God. That's what James is talking about. There's a kind of doubt, and many of you maybe have grown up with this idea that trials are really a sign that God is against you, that God is cursing you, that God is punishing you. And James is saying, no, don't doubt the character, the goodness of God. God is this good, good Father who wants to help you, who wants to give you wisdom, who wants to shape you, who wants to make you whole. You know, sometimes it's really hard for us to know that God is a Father waiting to hear us say, God, please help. You know, many of us have an idea of God that he's this kind of father. Maybe some of you have had this kind of father who just stands back and is like, don't talk to me. I don't want to hear you. That's not God. God's the God who's waiting for us to just ask, listening. It's a God who gives generously to all. And you notice James doesn't say to those who ask. He's just giving. He's constantly giving. He is so generous without reproach. What that means is he doesn't give expecting you to like pay him back, or he doesn't give as an insult. You ever received a gift from someone and it was actually like, I feel like there's something behind this gift. He's like that. God's not like that. God gives and he gives and he gives. He's just waiting to help you. You know, what happens if you believe that God is against you? What happens when you start to question the character of God is that you start to put your trust in other things that you believe will make you whole in times of trial. That's what he's saying about being unstable in all his ways. See, what James is going to talk about next is he's going to talk about common ways, one of the most common ways that we try to fix our problems with money. He's going to say it's very easy to believe that in times of trial, that if only I had more money, everything would be okay. This is what he says. He said, believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. Saying this, a person who's unstable in all their ways is someone who thinks that my trial will be fixed. My problems will go away if only I had more money. If only I had more power. If only I had more respect. If only I had more influence. If only those people liked me. And he's saying, don't believe that more stuff is going to make you whole and fix your problems. He says, a person like this is unstable in all they do. And the picture he's giving us is someone who's like on a boat. And the boat is lopsided. And the person on this boat is trying to get their balance. And so what they do is they're grabbing on to all these different things to give them some stability. And so he's saying, don't go after all of these other things. That's not going to give you stability. This is so important for us to understand what kind of doubt James is talking about. Because some people will tell you that if you doubt God's existence, or if you have questions about God that, you know, make you unsure of your belief in him, that maybe he's against you. And you know, for me, I grew up in the church, and I grew up going to youth retreats and youth conventions, and often what would happen is that I would be told, and we would all be told, that you need to be sure that you are sure that you are sure that you are sure that you believe in God. Anybody experience this? Yeah. Because if you die tonight and you're not sure, well, God might not be too happy about that. And it was in that context that people would take verses like this and make you feel as though having questions and having certain kinds of doubts is a sign of rebellion. And one day, I pulled someone aside who was a leader in our youth, and I really trusted this person, and I thought, oh, I need to talk to this guy, and I need to tell him. And I told him, man, I feel so guilty about this. I feel so ashamed about this. And I said, you know, I have this secret. I don't really know if God exists. I don't really know if I really believe. I don't really know if I'm sure that I'm sure that I'm sure. I'm not sure about this whole Jesus thing. And I felt so guilty, and I felt so ashamed, and I felt so like God was against me, and God was going to punish me, and God was angry with me. And that day, this person gave me a beautiful gift. A beautiful gift, a gift that I think our church is going to give to a lot of people who have walked away from church and from God. And that person, he said, you know, God honors honesty. God's not afraid of your questions. God's not afraid of your doubts. God's not mad at you. God is pleased that you could be honest rather than pretend. And this is so important as we think of our identity as a church. Because as a church, and we've already been practicing this, that this is, we want to make a space where we say, hey, questions are okay. Because there's a certain kind of doubt that we make room for. See, James once thought that Jesus was out of his mind. It's okay if you do, sometimes. And maybe this is really hard for you because you've grown up and believed and been told this lie that maturity equals certainty. That to be truly mature, you don't have to live by faith, you have to live by certainty and answers. And we forget that James says, hey, you will experience trials that will test your faith. You know, I think about this a lot as I think about being the youth pastor and overseeing our youth ministry. And I think about this and think about what it would mean to create a space for teens to be open about their doubts, about their questions, and even disagreements. That you could be here and disagree with me. And I'll say, hey, that's okay. What would that take? Where they can say, you know, I think this Jesus thing is kind of crazy. I'll say, it's okay. What would it take for us to be a community that allows people to wrestle through those kinds of doubts? And this is so important because I've seen this time and time again, and maybe some of you have seen this, that kids and teens pretend to believe in everything their parents believe. You know why? They don't want to disappoint their parents. But then what happens? They turn 18 or 19 or 20 and they walk away. You know, I think about Ambrose, my son, and I think, imagine how devastating it would be if he just sticks around in church and then he turns 20 and then he leaves and he tells me, you know, Dad, I never believed in any of this Jesus stuff. You know what would be so devastating about that? Not like, oh, what's wrong with you? Something's wrong with you. What's wrong with this kid? No. The devastating thing about this would be, how is it that I did not create a space when you were 12, when you were 15, when you were 17, to really explore those questions and those doubts? Why? Why did I not make it a space for you to really think through these questions? You know, I came across this quote from an important Christian leader that I admire, and he said this. He says, doubt is not the enemy of faith, not the enemy, but the companion of faith. And if the church doesn't have the courage to be honest about doubts, the rising generation that feels it most is going to feel that we, the church, is hiding something. If James is saying anything in these 18 verses, he's saying this: sometimes you will have trials. Sometimes your faith will be tested. Sometimes you're going to need wisdom. So when was the last time you asked God for wisdom? Maybe you don't ask for wisdom because you think the world is black and white. How are we creating spaces, not only for our kids, some of you don't have kids, but for our peers, for our friends, for our coworkers, where doubts and questions are explored rather than silenced? When disagreement is explored rather than silenced? So when was the last time you spoke honestly about a time in your life where a trial caused you, your faith to be tested? You know, James says this. He says, a person who doubts, a person who is unstable in all their ways, a person who's reaching for money and power and status and position to make them whole, that person, he says in verse 7, should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Again, some pretty tough words. You know, I used to read this and I used to think, if I doubt God, he's going to stop being nice to me. If I doubt God, he's going to be mad at me. He's going to punish me. That somehow my feelings towards God will change his feelings towards me. Sounds like he's saying that, but if we read carefully, that's not what he's saying at all. In fact, twice, James is like, no. God is a generous God who's giving and giving and giving and always waiting to give more and more. He's a God who gives no matter what we do. And what he's saying, he's like, it's not that doubt changes how God feels about us, but there's a certain kind of doubt that keeps us from receiving what God is giving to us. See, James is saying, hey, when you're looking out there for things to make you whole, grabbing onto this and grabbing onto that and grabbing onto this to give you stability and wholeness in the midst of trial, he says, you're not going to be able to receive anything. Your hands are full. What are you grasping to make you whole? God always gives. He doesn't stop giving, but we stop receiving. And then, verse 16 to 18, he says, don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. That God is this generous God, always giving and giving and giving. Now, what would happen to us? What would change in our lives if we really believed this? How would we view money differently? How would we view possessions differently? How would we view status differently? How would we view prayer differently? And he's saying, God is a giving God. And what he says is, it's amazing when he says, you're like a first fruits of everything that he's created. He's saying he's not just giving to you and for you, but he's giving you to the world. It's an amazing thing. You are the first fruits of God's creation, of God's work in the world, to bring life, to bring joy, to bring goodness to the world. It's not through people who have all the answers. It's not through people who don't have trials. It's not through people whose faith is never tested. It's through people who've learned to trust in a God who makes us whole, even in difficult times. God is making you whole, and as he's making you whole, he's putting you in places. He's putting you strategically in places and spheres to bring wholeness and life to others. You know, as we close, I just want to talk a little bit about our first youth retreat. And I've talked about it a little bit before from the stage, and some of you have heard a little bit about this. And, you know, in our youth retreat, we talked about being rooted in the right things and having the right roots, and how easy it is that certain things grow like weeds that grow and they block us from receiving what God might want to give us and what God might want to do in us. As we learn to cut out certain things in our lives and make room for God to help us grow in a healthy and flourishing way, you know, what happens is that we don't get healthy just because of us, just for us, but actually God helps us grow for the world. There's this beautiful idea all throughout the Bible that Jesus and the prophets talk about Israel as this vineyard. And when Israel is healthy, it produces fruit, which produces seeds, which creates more growth and more trees and more fruit and more seeds. And it spreads to make the world whole. It's not about me and my wholeness, but it's wholeness in me for the sake of the world, for the sake of your neighbor, for the sake of the person you work with, for the sake of the people you live with, you interact with. And so what we did in our youth retreat last night, we talked about who are people in our lives that God is putting us around to become the first fruits, to bring life and joy to the world. So we put up kids. We put up pictures of kids from the 180, and we started to pray. And one of the things what we learned as we started to pray for kids by name and started to say, you know, what do we want for this kid? Well, we want this person to continue to be creative, to be joyful, to know that she's loved, to have great friendships. And as we were praying for kids in this community, in our church, a special growth and a special maturity started to happen in us. Because it's funny, when you start to pray for other people, you start to realize, maybe I should be praying that for me. This is why maturity matters. That we would be first fruits of all of His creation. So this week, when we encounter various trials, big and small, each of us will be tempted to trust in the wrong things. We'll be tempted to believe that God is against us. We'll be tempted to give up when things get tough. May we trust in God who gives generously and without end to all. May we be people committed to growing and maturing so that we would become a gift to the world. Would you stand? We'll pray. God, there are times where we are in a trial, in a storm, and things feel unstable. Things below us feel like they're falling, and it's hard to know what to grab onto. Help us to remember this morning and this week that You are a good, good Father, waiting to help us, waiting to give us wisdom. Help us to trust in that. Help us to remember that Jesus is alive, transforming lives. Help us to make room for those who are maybe as James once was, doubting, skeptical, questioning, unsure. Help us to have the wisdom to know how to live. God, we thank You for the reminder that You are good and that You give good gifts to Your children.